Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, October 29th, 2020. Producing today from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, this is it, the last daily podcast of the season. We're going to have some off-season podcasts intermittently, but we've been going at it day after day after day since the middle of February, and we have reached the finish line today.
First of all, love doing the podcast. I love the listeners, Buster. I love working with you, but I can't not say I'm a little excited to have a bit of a breather here. It is a little bit of a grind. Even when I talk to my fellow podcast producers here at ESPN, they're like, wait, you do that every single day still? Why? Like, it's baseball. We got to do it every day. There's no choice.
You got to do it every day. That reflects the sport.
Yes.
And I say this, Taylor, you have done a phenomenal job this year. I so much appreciate it. You know, every day having to get up, having to answer my emails, having to respond to my questions, having to, you know, go through all the crap that I throw on you, and having to do that every day.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Buster. It's a privilege and an honor to work alongside you. So no worries there. Let's get to it.
Yeah, let's get to it. All right, start with this. Major League Baseball announced it will investigate the actions of Justin Turner of the Dodgers after the third baseman was told he tested positive for coronavirus in the midst of the last game of the World Series. In a statement, the league called Turner's decision, quote, wrong and put everyone he came in contact with at risk. When MLB security raised the matter of being on the field with Turner, he emphatically refused to comply. Now, I looked into that phrase and asked, okay, what does that mean, emphatically refused to comply? And I was told that on multiple occasions, Turner was told by officials from Major League Baseball that he needed to isolate himself and that he directly, verbally said no in so many words. The league is said to have begun its investigation. Both teams were tested again on Wednesday, and their travel back to their home cities happened after players tested negative. Justin Turner was not on the Dodger team flight. Well, you know this is a big story when it's gone national with Good Morning America. Here was a report this morning. Robin Roberts, the anchor, Kaylee Hartung, and Tim Kirkjian are the voices you'll hear.
Switching to the MLB, investigating Dodger star Justin Turner, who joined the on-field celebration despite testing positive and being pulled from the game. Kaylee Hartung is at Dodger Stadium with more on this for us. Good morning, Kaylee.
Good morning, Robin. Justin Turner grew up just 30 minutes from here. He dreamed of playing for his hometown Dodgers, and he'll have the pictures and the memories of that celebration he waited his whole life for forever. But now the question is, at what cost?
There it is.
The Dodgers were returning home to Los Angeles World Series champions, but one player wasn't on board. Third baseman Justin Turner, now under investigation by Major League Baseball for risking the safety of others. Turner was removed from the title-clinching game just before the eighth inning after his COVID-19 tests came back positive. The commissioner's office says he violated coronavirus protocols when he then returned to the field for the team celebration.
He wanted to come out and take a picture with the trophy, which, you know, can't state strongly enough how big of a role he's played in this, the success of this organization. I don't think there was anyone that was going to stop him.
In a statement, the league saying while a desire to celebrate is understandable, Turner's decision to leave isolation and enter the field was wrong and put everyone he came in contact with at risk. When MLB security raised the matter of being on the field with Turner, he emphatically refused to comply.
The only reason that the baseball season was able to finish is that the players and everyone around the teams did such a diligent job of following those protocols. It gives the game a bad look.
That's Turner celebrating with his teammates, at times with his mask off, kissing his wife, and taking a team photo next to Dodgers manager Dave Roberts, a cancer survivor. The Major League Baseball Players Association tells GMA it's still gathering facts to determine events. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti pointing to this as a reminder that anyone can contract the virus.
I think the guidance is clear that if we are positive, we should stay away from people.
Well, Justin Turner says he hasn't experienced any symptoms, and all of his teammates tested negative before they returned to L.A. This is an unprecedented situation, and until this investigation is complete, it's unclear if there will be any penalty for Turner or the Dodgers.
We'll,
guys,
we'll see how the investigation plays out, Kaylee. Thank you.
The World Series ratings, TV ratings, dropped 32% below previous low. According to Nielsen Media Research, Fox averaged a 5.2 rating, a 12 share, and 9.785 million viewers. The previous low was 7.6 in a rating from the Giants' 2012 sweep of the Detroit Tigers. The New York Post reports the New York Mayor Bill de Blasio was trying to kill the Mets sale to Steve Cohen. The mayor's office sort of denied it, said that what the mayor is doing privately matches what he's doing publicly. The bottom line is that Major League Baseball owners are set for a final vote on the Mets sale on Friday. Cohen needs 22 of the other 29 owners to get approval for that. In an ominous first sign for what the winner will be in baseball, a ton of players saw their 2021 contractual options declined by their respective teams on Wednesday. Colton Wong, Howie Kendrick, Anibal Sanchez, Wilson Ramos, Robinson Chirinos, Todd Frazier, Sergio Romo were among those. Think about what happened with the Colorado Rockies and Daniel Murphy. Danny Murphy had a $12 million option, combined team and player option. The Rockies opted out, and they gave him a $6 million buyout. So over the difference of $6 million, the Rockies cut ties with Daniel Murphy. The Marlins, by the way, in recent days, picked up the option of $12.5 million for outfielder Starling Marte. Clayton Kershaw was on Good Morning America yesterday. He, of course, now a World Series champion. He said he won't complain about the bubble and that it was worth it.
Well, you know, I think just with everything that's going on in the world and being able to have a baseball season in general, you know, I don't think there's anything to complain about. You know, we've been in a bubble for almost 4 weeks now, and you know, it's been the bubble into the stadium and back every day, but you know what? It was worth it. We won and we got to have a baseball season. And, you know, if you told me in April and May that we were going to get to have a baseball season and I was going to get to win a World Series, I would have stayed in a bubble for the whole time to get to do that. So it's incredible. We're excited to get out of here and go home, but it's just an incredible feeling right now.
Kershaw grew up with a great set of friends, and those friendships have been maintained all the way into adulthood. He talked about that and about leaving the bubble yesterday.
Yeah, they were so excited. They probably haven't slept either. You know, they're just so happy to be there and be a part of it. And I haven't seen them yet, but they got to come to the game at least. And I think today we're going to go home and get to see him. So it's just, we're just really excited about everything that it goes with winning a World Series, and they are too.
A big last show today. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirkchin, Jesse Rogers, Paul Embiidkeaty. We're going to hear from Todd Radom, and we will follow a podcast tradition at the end. But before that, I want to just tell you, check out the latest episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. Bill is joined by his friend Mina Kimes to discuss possible trade options for the league's Super Bowl contenders. Download and subscribe to the Bill Barnwell Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN, and he a lot of times will be specifically talking about the Chicago Cubs. But today, Jesse, we're going to be talking about other issues, and the issue that everyone in America seems to be talking about, which is Justin Turner's actions after he was told that he had tested positive for coronavirus. Major League Baseball coming out yesterday, announcing that it's going to investigate him. And I got to tell you, Jesse, I think he's going to be suspended. I don't think it's going to be a long suspension, but I think it's going to be something where Major League Baseball is going to try to make a statement and essentially, announce publicly that they think he was very wrong with the way he handled it.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. He's in trouble. There's no doubt. I mean, the statement that MLB put out last night sort of speaks for itself. He disobeyed direct orders to stay quarantined, to stay isolated. And he went out there and celebrated with his team. It's kind of funny. They didn't put him on the team plane after everything that he just did. But obviously optics are important. My point being, he probably infected the team already. At that point, you may as well put him on the plane. But, you know, obviously you have to be as careful as you can with the people that you find, you know, that tested positive. And he tested positive and didn't follow protocols and directly disobeyed MLB security. So absolutely he's going to have to pay some sort of penalty. Maybe the Dodgers included, because obviously they didn't care too much that he went back out there. And so, yeah, there'll be something. I agree with you. There'll be some sort of suspension going into next season.
Yeah. Andrew Friedman, head of baseball ops, did an amazing job of building this team, and he's run this franchise in a way it ensures Dodger success for years to come. Even his statements after the game where he basically said, yeah, who's going to stop him given that he's on the team? And when I heard that, I was like, well, Andrew, it's your responsibility. Like you, this is your player in this moment. And I understand that the Dodgers are running around, but the Dodgers officials needed to help out with that. And I think the Dodgers actions are going to be investigated as well, based on what I heard yesterday.
Yeah. And remember though, in 4 days, he's no longer a Dodger, right? He's a free agent. So at that point, how much control do they have and how much does he really care? And obviously where he goes, that factors in the fact that he could be suspended for the first 10 games or something of the next season. So it was just a terrible, terrible moment after a great, great moment, and that is the Dodgers finally winning that championship.
All right, before we talk about the winter market and some ominous signs that we saw yesterday about where this winter is going to go, I want to ask you about the Blake Snell decision the other day. Everyone's been weighing in, and you get your shot here.
Yeah, I covered the Rays the entire series, so I was on all those pregame Zooms, and including the one the day before. This is the day before, on the off day, Kevin Cash forecasting exactly what he was going to do, and it just, man, I mean, are we at that point where we're deciding the day before? I mean, I covered the Cubs when Joe Maddon pulled Kyle Hendricks early and talked and forecasted that as well. It's just a weird situation we've come to in baseball, where guys know days ahead of time how they're going to manage a game. And, you know, I like to be overly dramatic with you, Buster. You can make a case that's the worst decision in the history of the game for a manager. It was that bad. And the fact that he didn't use his eyes at all. I was texting with an executive yesterday. I mean, the whole idea of the computer and the analytics is supposed to be in combination with what you see on the field, not instead of what you see on the field. And right. Now it's given a lot of ammunition to the anti-numbers people. And that is going to have some ripple effect, I think. The whole idea is to have a balancing act between the two. And we saw Kevin Cash do exactly the opposite of that. He completely went by the numbers instead of using his eyes.
Yeah, it's funny. When I did radio shows yesterday, a lot of the people were asking the question of, you know, does this mean analytics is going to go away? And I was like, absolutely not. In fact, analytics are going to be, they're going to continue to have even deeper influence in baseball. However, I do think it's going to kick off a larger conversation about how analytics are affecting the entertainment product and whether, as with Kevin Cash, the sport's gone too far.
Well, I joked with somebody, and this is just a joke because we know how Andrew Friedman is with the Dodgers. He came from the Rays, and I joked that it was Andrew Friedman managing both teams at that moment because, you know, that was kind of – the Dodgers have that label of going by the book and the computer and all that. And, you know, Kevin Cash did it as well. I think it also is going to kick off the thing for managers, though, Buster. I truly believe this, that they're going to be reminded even by those – buttoned up executives that you have to use your eyes sometimes. And I get it that this guy had not finished six innings in over a year. I get it that for however many starts he pitched this season, Kevin Cash had a formula that worked with Blake Snell. This was not the Cy Young Blake Snell. But in that moment, in game six, he was the Blake Snell Cy Young winner. And that's when he should have adjusted his thinking. It's just, so I do think it's an inflection point a little bit with managers. It's not going to change how analytics are used. But I do think some managers are going to be reminded that their eyes can tell a story as much as the numbers can.
So I've been talking on the podcast for weeks and weeks about how, in talking with agents and talking with club officials, they really expect a brutal winter for potential free agents because of the change in the financial landscape. And the fact is that teams, as they're looking to cut payroll, and I think most teams, if not all teams, are going to be looking to take their payroll down into 2021 to try to offset some of the losses of no fans in the stands. You're not going to do it with young players who are cheap. You're not going to do it with players who have existing contracts, like a Jason Hayward, for example, on the Cubs, the team you cover. But where you can do it are veteran players who are free agents. And yesterday, wow, you know, some of the decisions that were made by teams to not pick up options were predictable. You know, there's some veterans who had coming off of bad years. And then there's a decision like Colton Wong, who's 30 years old, Gold Glove second baseman, one of the most impactful defensive players in the sport. You know, he didn't have a great year in 2020 in this small sample size of games, but he had a good year. I think his on-base percentage was like around 350. And again, he's a really good defensive player. In 2019, 3.7 WAR, okay? And as again, he just turned 30. The Cardinals had a team option for $12.5 million. They turned that down. A one-year obligation for $12.5 million, and instead they gave him a $1 million buyout. So you're basically talking about an $11.5 million decision by the Cardinals to cut ties with a player who's been pretty good through the years. He's right in the middle of his career. That, to me, was a sign of these numbers are going to may go down further than what we even expected.
Yeah, I've been forecasting this for a while, and a pretty good indication, Buster, is when teams are cutting ticket operation personnel.
Yep.
We're talking about people making 40, 50,000 PR people, baseball operations. If they're cutting those people to save some nickels and dimes, just imagine what they're going to do to their payrolls. I mean, you mentioned Colton Wong in Chicago here. We're waiting on a decision on Anthony Rizzo. I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying that I have to wonder. This is like the captain of the team. Yeah, he's over 30 years old. But in normal years, you'd pick up that $16.5 million without a doubt. And I still think they will. But the fact that we have to even wonder about it. Remember, when you talk about these team options, it's almost, you know, it goes back to that saying, Buster, there are no bad one-year deals. And that's what a team option is. It's basically re-signing your guy for 1 year. And if you can't afford to do that, then it is a good litmus test. The other name in Chicago here is John Lester. He is a free agent. He is an option. They're going to turn down the $25 million option. But you'd think they'd be able to work something out to bring him back for 1 year, win his 200th game as a Cub. It should be a no-brainer, like CC Sabathia had in New York, and that's up in the air. So I agree with you. It is just the start of an awful winter. I've talked to agents. They're just resigned to it. Remember, it's not just the 2020 revenues. It's the 2021 ones. We don't know if fans are going to be back in the stands in April. And if they are, then it still probably won't be at full capacity. So there's all sorts of question marks about 21, let alone what happened in 20. So, yes, I think free agents, veterans, guys with options, they all have to be prepared for what's to come. And that's why you're not going to see any opt-outs. That's the one thing. I mean, no one's opting out of a contract that has that ability this year.
No, and just to, you know, sort of head off at the past, all the response that I always get when we talk about, you know, these teams owned by billionaires cutting their payrolls, of course they could afford it if they want to, right? If they wanted to, they could dig into their own pockets, their own money, and they could you know, pay some of these contracts, not only for the players, but as you said, for the club employees. But the fact is that these are businessmen running a business, and they're seeing losses because of the fact that there are no fans in the stands, and that's a reality that affected the entire sport. And just to double back on Rizzo, I'd say this, okay? And I agree with you. You're shocked that we're even having this conversation about whether or not the Cubs would pick up the option. if he wasn't Anthony Rizzo, World Series hero, if he wasn't Anthony Rizzo, Chicago Cub, you know, an icon, someone who at some point in his lifetime, there might be a statue built of him outside of Wrigley Field. I think it would be a no-brainer in the current circumstances to not pick up that option, Jesse, because I think there are going to be so many players available at first base, you know, DH, that type of player. Without his history with the team, that would be an example, I think, where the team would go, you know what, we're going to use supply and demand. We're going to go and get somebody else. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think you're right. If his name wasn't Anthony Rizzo, there's a good chance of that. And think about, picking up an option is almost the same thing as a guy in his third year of arbitration, like if you non-tender him. It's almost like the same thing, right? We're discussing that in Chicago. Chris Bryant, his final year of arbitration, owed over $20 million. Is that a guy that could be non-tendered, Chris Bryant? So this is the next question that doesn't have to be answered just yet. Right now we're in the option phase of this whole thing. But the non-tenders that are coming, a lot of agents are worried about that as well. Is my guy going to get non-tendered? I still don't have an answer on what arbitration is going to look like. I've asked agents. They're not completely sure either. I assume it's going to be some prorated increase. But even those smaller increases, if you're going from $18 million to $21 million, well, if you non-tender them, you go from $18 million to zero. And so there's going to be some possibly big names that are non-tendered as well. So this is just one of those off seasons. You don't want to be a free agent. You don't want to be caught without a contract. And unfortunately, a lot of players are going to be in that position.
And I want to reiterate that the supply and demand is going to be something that teams are going to use against the players because of the high volume of free agents. You know, you begin with a class of what, about 200, and then you start looking at the players who have been added because the teams didn't pick up their options. And then you talk about the non-tenders, and that really is going to affect the numbers in the offers. And you mentioned Chris Bryant. I had this fascinating situation develop with a baseball executive who's not with the Cubs. You know, 3 months ago, when Bryant got off to a slow start, I was going back and forth with them, and I said, so do you think there's any way that the Cubs would think about not tendering Bryant if he doesn't have a good season? He goes, no, that's never going to happen. The same guy, without remembering that conversation, got back to me about a month ago, and he said, well, you know, you got to believe the Cubs are going to look at non-tendering Chris Bryant. That's how quickly this has changed, I think, in part because of what you said, the uncertainty of where baseball's finances are going with the possibility of no fans in the stands for 21.
Yeah, it's awful. And you feel for everybody involved, especially those office people that have been lost their jobs. I mean, the Cubs fired 100 employees, and these were important people. And you know, you talk about baseball operations. There's a reason these people were hired in baseball operations to do a job. And now other people have to pick up the slack. So it's a sad state of affairs. But I think everyone is prepared for the worst this offseason.
And that potentially, based on what I'm hearing, could be including a long wait for the start of the 21 season. Because, of course, if they have to shorten the season, I think the owners are going to want even more financial concessions than they got this year. Offset some of the salaries that have been negotiated in the past. And I think the players would absolutely go to war over that.
Yeah. And then, a new CBA is looming as well. So there's a lot of things I remember you and I talked about this during the shutdown last time around that, you know, some executives wanted to combine some of the conversations of 20 with 21 and even with the new CBA. Hey, we've got a new reality here. Let's do it all together. And then there was such a pushback saying we can't even get one summer figured out. How are we going to figure out two or three, you know, down the line here? So there's a lot that needs to go on behind the scenes to make baseball happen over the next couple of years here.
All right, Jesse. Well, I appreciate your time. Thanks again for doing this, and thanks for your help with the pod all year.
Absolutely, Buster. It should be an interesting offseason. I'll talk to you whenever you call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Team heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkjian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkjian covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, first I want to start with this. Thanks for all your help on the podcast this year.
Well, I love doing the podcast, Buster. So you can call on me anytime at any day. And I would love to help. And I mostly like it when you make fun of me because so does everyone else. But it's all good.
I noticed on Twitter there were people like sending you pictures of Rocky Balboa, which is kind of exciting.
We're going to go over this one more time. I didn't run around the hotel parking lot to the Rocky theme, okay? I didn't. Justin Ware did that for me. So we'll move on to that.
All right. So this morning there's a piece written by you on ESPN.com about the craziest, dumbest, worst, and in some respects, the best year of Major League Baseball because of how everybody came together to have a 60-game season, to put on a postseason before the Dodgers wound up winning it. What was give me an example or two of the most incredible stories you heard in doing your reporting.
Well, the way it ended with Justin Turner is just incredible. The way it started with Juan Soto is just incredible. And everything that happened in between was remarkable also. And I think baseball deserves a lot of credit for getting through this with so many things that started and finished. And I think everyone should be just grateful that we finished the season and we got a really good October also. It was just the strangest thing. And I kept thinking, this might not make it. And then it did. And then it almost didn't make it if we had had a game seven with the Justin Turner situation. So I just thought it was something that I wanted everyone to know that this was great that we got through this, but please don't make us go through this again for anyone because it was just so exhausting for everyone involved.
Yeah, when we would do Zoom calls leading up to our Sunday night broadcast with folks at the team level, and look, these are not people who are asking for way to goes, but we would ask questions like, well, you know, how are you spending your time stuck in the hotel? And, you know, how are you guys handling this? And the one that stuck out to me was Brian Snitker. Okay, he's someone, Tim, who's, you know, he's such a good person and he's such a measured person. And in past years, when I asked him, you know, how do you spend an off day? He told me that he likes to go and walk around Costco's and just look at stuff. And that's how he likes to spend the day. He's just such a regular guy. So I asked him during the playoffs, you know, how are you getting through this? What are you doing? And he explained, well, we can't really go anyplace. We stay in the hotel. And in the playoffs, in the National League Championship Series, the Braves were set up in a hotel that was right next to a golf course. And so what Brian Snitker did was basically when he would go down to get his coffee, he'd go out and sit and watch golfers come in, amateur golfers be rolling in on the 18th hole and seeing how they were doing. And then at about 9:30 or so, he would break off to watch the show Vikings. And he said that he watched five seasons of Vikings this year. And he was fascinated by that history. You know, we're talking a lot about Justin Turner right now. I think a lot more people in baseball adapted the way that Brian Snitker did.
Right. And that was the only way through it, Buster, which is what was so encouraging and what made it one of the best seasons ever in its own right. It made it the the wackiest and smartest season ever is that enough people did the right thing, did the smart thing, and got their way through it. It was difficult for everyone, and yet that's what made it a good season in the end. That a difficult situation, people made the best of it and ultimately did a pretty darn good job.
So you, like so many people in the baseball industry, basically lost your mind the other night when Blake Snell was taken out of the game. And you and I agree, Kevin Cash is a terrific manager. He's a great guy. But that it felt like a tipping point into a larger conversation, Tim, you know, that I've been hearing about off the record for months, where people in the game are like, we need to think about baseball as an entertainment product. And we are just chasing these numbers way too far down a rabbit hole. And a thought I had was, you know, this offseason, I really hope, because we're going to have a lot of downtime, I really hope that Major League Baseball and the Players Association begin conversations about how to boost the entertainment value of the product. Because that decision the other night, Tim, was to me one of the classic examples of what concerns me about where baseball is now. What do you think?
Right. And disturbed is the right word, Buster. I'm concerned. I'm worried where we are right now. And this is how bad it is. I did a radio show yesterday, and not one question was asked of me about the Dodgers winning the World Series. I got five questions, and they were all about Blake Snell being taken out. Where are we now in this gulf between the old school guys and the analytics guys? This is not a healthy situation. When a night when a team clinches for the first time in 32 years, the number one story was why someone got taken out of a game after 73 pitches. And my hope is, since something like this, something this controversial happened in game six of a World Series, that we will start to look and see where this might lead towards bringing the game back away from the analytics to some degree. I've told you a million times, Buster, my father was a PhD in mathematics, MIT undergrad. I know about the numbers. I love mathematics, but at some point we can't go all the way over to that side. So again, after I talked the other night and wrote all this stuff, I must have had 5, 6, 10 different people call me and say, we have to take the game back. We have to get our game back. These are people in the sport, people in uniform, people who have been in uniform. And that's what they're saying, is that you can like the analytics, but when you go too far and take a 27-year-old, 6'4", 225 kid who won the Cy 2 years ago, was on full rest, you take him out after 73 pitches when he is your best chance to beat a better team. That's what people are responding to. And maybe this is what you say, the tipping point, that this is where we start to examine, are we really doing this the right way?
So overnight, we got word that Paul Hembakides wants to come on and explain that, yes, the numbers show that Kevin Cash was, you know, potentially making the right decision. I don't know if Hembo's going to go as far as to endorse it. But if he makes that argument, Tim, I'm just going to say, no, I'm sorry, you're wrong. It was a bad decision. And it was funny, yesterday I spent some of my morning calling around to people in front offices where they're analytically driven to get their opinions. And those people were like, no, it was a bad decision, because completely ignored what was in front of Kevin Cash on the field. And that was that Blake Snell was totally dominating.
Right. Buster, look, we all know that 18 batters in, there's a plan to take him out of the game. But my whole point, which has been my whole point for the last 5 years, is we've stopped watching the games. You got to watch the games to realize that the situation has changed. Nobody could hit that guy. Mookie Betts was asked afterwards, what did he think when Snell was taken out? He said, thank you. He was the best player on the field that night. You can't take him out. You have to recognize the numbers say he can't go a third time through, but tonight is different. His adrenaline level, whatever, his stuff, his strength is different than it's been. So we have to give him a chance. And Buster, let's face it, the Dodgers are better than the Rays. The Rays can't go toe to toe with the Dodgers on any level. The only way to beat them is to veer off of the pattern and try something else. And that is let a young guy go further into a game than he was supposed to. And they didn't do that. And to me, that's where the mistake came.
So I'm going to throw a couple of bleacher tweets at you from listeners. First, this from Michael Preston, Mick P, 1979. He writes, baseball, like all sports, is about pushing individuals to become better. If you constantly deny your players a chance to do this, no one will improve and the game will die. All analytics are doing is making everyone scared to push the limits. And he asked for thoughts on that. And I would disagree respectfully. I think in a lot of cases, like we're seeing relievers like Nick Anderson, they really benefit from the study of analytics. But on the other hand, I do worry, Tim, about, you know, how this whole generation of starting pitchers are basically being taught how to not compete after five innings. And that someone like Blake Snell may well have been capable of a Madison Bumgarner moment the other night. But you know what? We'll never know, because analytics in this case was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. And Buster, I don't blame the players anymore. I blame the system. I blame that we have pampered these guys. We have conditioned these guys to go five innings, 100 pitches. They're not prepared to do anymore because we haven't let them do anymore. Sometimes you have to let somebody be great. Sometimes you have to let an ace be an ace and take your chances. And when you're playing a team like the Dodgers, you have to take a risk. You have to try to steal home. You have to take the extra base, and you have to leave Blake Snell in a little bit longer. Look, I understand the Rays, they went to the World Series in part because of the way they beautifully use analytics. We all understand that. I'm just saying, once in a while, you have to say, we're going to veer from the course here and try something else, because the Dodgers are too good to take them one-on-one.
Marty asked, do you see Justin Turner being suspended for participating in Tuesday night's postgame celebration? If so, how many games would be appropriate? And he writes, loves the show and thanks for an awesome season. And Mitchell, Tigers of Detroit, adds this. Do you think Justin Turner will face a backlash from fans? Tim, I would answer this way. I do think he's going to be suspended. I think it's going to be a lot like Yuli Gurriel's suspension when he made the racist gesture during the postseason. I think it's going to wind up being like four or five games. It's going to be much more about Major League Baseball trying to make a statement about Turner's actions than sitting him down for a long period of time, because let's face it, there's no precedent for this. And the union might push back on some of it. Backlash from fans, and I'll just add this, in free agency, I think he'll wind up going back with the Dodgers. The Dodgers love him. They'll work out a one-year contract. Justin turns 36 next month. And fans, I'm sure he's going to hear it, because this story, as we demonstrated at the top, Tim, by having the Good Morning America report, which you were a part of, just shows you that he's now on the national radar. And I do think he'll probably hear some from fans next year.
Yeah, I think he will. And I think he should. What he did was not very smart and not very responsible. And I understand you want to go out there. It's a once-in-a-lifetime moment. He's been on all these World Series teams that didn't win. Of course you would want to celebrate with your teammates. But when Major League Baseball says you're not leaving isolation, you can't leave isolation. That's the only way we got through the season, Buster, is that everyone followed the rules. And to not follow them on the final day of the season just is unacceptable. So I think he'll get a suspension, nothing major. I think he'll get some backlash. I think he'll go back to the Dodgers, and I think he'll be a really good player for them again next year.
Tim, thanks again for doing this all year.
Okay, Buster, thank you. I appreciate you having me. You do a great job on this podcast, and honestly, no corniness aside, it's an honor to be on with you. I mean it.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo, of course, is Paul Imbachiti. He's a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho on the show Get Up, and we hear that his position is defined by exactly how much of a wild partier he is. Hembo, thanks for joining us on the last regular daily show. You know, I was intrigued by the note that I got from Taylor that you wanted to come on and be the only human being in civilization to defend Kevin Cash's decision to pull Blake Snell from Game 6.
That's exactly right. I am here, Buster, to do the impossible. I'm going to defend Kevin Cash, and that's because I genuinely believe that he made the right decision in pulling Blake Snell when he did. Now, I've heard this show and many, many others roundly destroy him for it. And look, there are reasonable opinions that disagree. However, what I'm going to do, I'm going to provide you and your listeners the exact information that I believe Kevin Cash used in making that decision. And if you still, you know, want to go with your original opinion, all good. But what I'm not willing to do is chalk this up to analytics don't work. Because to be clear, the Rays are here because of analytics. You don't get to game six of the World Series by pulling your pitchers based off of feel. I think we can agree that they use information better than anyone else. In this case, it clearly backfired. But I'm going to give you what I believe are the exact numbers Kevin Cash was using when he made that decision. So this season, Buster, including the playoffs, when facing the opposing batting order for the third time, Blake Snell owned a 10.13 ERA and allowed an OPS of 960. Both of those figures rank in the bottom five among all pitchers to start at least a dozen games. Now, we heard Kevin Cash after the game say he didn't want to see Mookie Betts and Corey Seager have a chance to face Snell for the third time. Further, Buster, I came on your podcast the day of the game and said Blake Snell's magic number is 50 because once he reaches that pitch count, his stuff really starts to decline. Well, he was at 73 pitches, and the numbers are even more stark when he's there. Buster, no pitcher in baseball allowed a worse batting line from pitch 75 on than Blake Snell. Opponents batted 349 against him with an OPS near 1,100 in those circumstances. So when you consider his lack of success year-long when going through the order for the third time and his lack of success year-long when his pitch count approaches or exceeds 75, I'd have to imagine that Kevin Cash, who was there for each and every one of those pitches, decided that information was more powerful than what he and all of us were seeing in the moment. What say you?
First off, I'll start with this qualifier. I think Kevin Cash is a terrific manager, and you're exactly right. The Rays are in the spot that they were in, you know, playing all the way to Game 6 of the World Series because of the way that they use numbers. I so respected Blake Snell at the podium and speaking with reporters, defending Kevin Cash to some degree. Not about that decision, but telling reporters, look, he made a lot of great decisions during the year, and he's a good manager. That all said, my follow-up question to you would be, were those numbers compiled that you just read, did they have anything to do with what happened on Tuesday, October 27th?
No. In terms of every one of those numbers, of course, from the very beginning of their season until through game two of the World Series, which he also started. So, no, the answer to your question is no.
Would you agree that Blake Snell's performance on October 27th was very different than what those numbers indicated in previous starts?
Yes, in the aggregate, I would, Buster, but I would also couch it by saying he also threw the ball really well in game two. In fact, he had 9 strikeouts in game two, which is when Kevin Cash came out and got him then too. Okay, so he allowed a homer to the 9 hitter in game two, and then he walked Mookie, and then he allowed a single on a slider to Corey Seager. That was the third time in the order when facing Betts and Seager. So Cash brought in Anderson. He struck out Justin Turner. That home run he allowed to Chris Taylor was his 80th pitch. And the single he allowed to Corey Seager, which was a very similar pitch to the one that Austin Barnes singled on, was his 88th pitch. So what Kevin Cash was essentially doing was watching history repeat itself. He was approaching that pitch count. And also, Buster, he had 9 strikeouts at the time. We know that he struck out the top 3 hitters in each of the first 2 times. But it was 5 guys in a row that had put the ball in play. And my judgment here is that his stuff actually was deteriorating, even though the results weren't quite showing that yet. The pitch he threw to A.J. Pollock wasn't all that sharp. And the single to Austin Barnes was a slider middle without much movement on it. So my opinion here is that, like we talked about on the show previewing game 6, his velocity isn't the indicator. It's the shape of the breaking ball. And my opinion here is that even though what we were watching felt like we were watching a masterful performance, we were already starting to see the stuff decline just a little bit. And Kevin Cash recognized that.
Now, I would say, and we talked about this yesterday, you can use analytics any way you want. Part of my argument would be, look, if Kevin Cash had decided, you know what, I'm going to go batter to batter as we start the third time through the order with Blake Snell, I would have understood that. And you and I both know that for some reason in the last couple of years, Mookie Betts' stats against left-handed pitchers are dramatically worse than against right-handed pitchers. So wouldn't it have made some sense to, as Mookie's at the plate, going batter to batter with Blake Snell to see if he could, especially through those 3 guys at the top of the lineup who he had struck out twice each? Wouldn't that have made some sense?
Potentially it would have made some sense. But I actually think that the better argument here, Buster, is that he just brought in the wrong guy. because Nick Anderson had clearly deteriorated right. throughout the course of this series. And also, I would say that you talked about this earlier in the week on your podcast, as the series matures, the advantages that you have in bringing in these relievers out of the bullpen deteriorates because you've seen them so many times. So if Kevin Cash's whole argument here is, well, I don't want to allow them to see him for the third time. Well, they've already seen Nick Anderson three times, right? So that's part of the argument here. I think it's clear that his stuff was not the same and that Kevin Cash went to the wrong guy. But I think the overwhelming mountain of data and evidence that he used, which I just shared, indicates that that was the most important thing to him, was making the decision based on all the data, and that's how the Rays do it. You live by the sword, and you die by the sword.
You're on one side of this argument. I'm on the other side. Taylor gets to break the tie. Taylor, jump in and tell Hembo if he's wrong or right.
Hembo, you're so wrong, man. He was dealing. I understand where you're coming
Taylor,
from.
Taylor, he was dealing. However, he was not dealing the same way towards the back end of his start as he was at the beginning. Like I said, the last five guys that he faced had all put the ball in play against him. That pitch he threw to Austin Barnes was really sloppy. It caught a lot of the plate. But you know what, Taylor? Let's let bygones be bygones. What matters most, of course, is that our boy Clayton Kershaw finally got his World Series championship. And you know what that means, Taylor? Hit the sound. Selfish, I am wrong. I am right.
God.
I swear I'm right. I swear know. I knew it all along.
No, all right. Hembo, goodbye.
Later, boys.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, I wanted your voice to be the last guest voice on the podcast this year. You've always been so great with us and so generous. And you've got a hockey book coming out next week.
Buster and Taylor, I am so excited because I am holding this book in my hand. I got a shipment of 500 pounds of them the other day. It is called Fabric of the Game. The stories behind the NHL's names, logos, and uniforms. A little bit of a departure for me. Hockey instead of baseball, but here we are. It is available wherever books are sold. Starting November 3rd, other things happening November 3rd, but this will be the biggest.
That'll be the biggest news of the day for sure. All right, let's get to this week's quiz, the last quiz of the year.
All right, here we go, guys. Which of the following Dodgers dollar figures is highest? A, the original cost to construct Dodger Stadium. B, Mookie Betts' 2021 salary. C, the entire combined payroll of the 88 World Champion Dodgers. Or D, the price that Walter O'Malley paid to purchase a controlling interest in the club. Which of these is highest?
Wow.
Cost to construct Dodger Stadium, Mookie Betts' 2021 salary, the entire combined payroll of the 88 World Champions, or Walter O'Malley's cost to buy the Dodgers?
All right. Well, go for it, Taylor.
Oh, boy. I'll go... Because we're dealing with 2020 dollars, I'll go with Mookie Betts' salary this year.
Yeah, I'm kind of tempted to go there. And I feel like the question is sort of set up to go there. But and I can't remember the exact structure of Mookie's contract. And Todd, forgive me, but I don't know whether your question includes the buyout, the deferrals, how those are factored
total,
in.
Total salary, including 2021 on the books.
Wow. Okay. Golly. And you know, the buyouts or the bonus schedule and how that's going to work. I'm going to say Mookie Betts' contract. I agree.
It's the original cost to construct Dodger Stadium, which is $3 million.
Oh,
what a steal.
And Mookie will be, the official number is 22.5 next year.
Wow.
And just to let you guys know, the entire combined payroll of the 1988 World Champion Dodgers was under $15.5 million.
Yeah, that one I knew because, of course, that was really my last year of fandom. And I was remembering when Oral Hershiser got $3 million, it was a huge story. Like, oh, my God, can you believe a player got $3 million? So that one was quickly eliminated for me. Walter O'Malley buying the team, that one was quickly eliminated. I went down to two. And, of course, I picked the wrong one, which is fitting for how I performed in the quiz this week, this year as well. Taylor?
Buster, I'm sorry. You know, it's been well documented on here. I'm not exactly a baseball guy. So, you know, I'll take the win. I'll take the win. I'll take my bow. I'll slink off into the offseason.
Yeah, you took the win for the year, but not for this week. We both finished in defeat. And Todd again.
That's okay. What do I care? I'm the champion.
Hey, listen, no baseball questions for Taylor. No color questions for Buster. It evens out.
No time for losers, Buster. All right. That's what they say in the song.
Oh, there you go. All right. Todd, I appreciate it.
Guys, thank you. And just very briefly, thank you so much for the entire season. All good things to everyone out there. I want to thank everyone for listening along, for reaching out to me on Twitter, for being good friends, good fans. I'm going to miss you guys. Let's survive until next season.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. Let's do it.
One last time.
I don't know if you're a Hamilton guy,
boy.
Buster. I wanted to throw that in there. All right. We're just going with one final tweet here. Tim Valenzuela writes in at Tim Valenzuela. Buster, did you ever vote for World Series MVP or LCS MVP when you covered them? If not, how does the process go down? One person, one vote, similar to MVP Cy Young, Manager of the Year, Rookie of the Year in both leagues for the regular season. Can you give us a peek behind the curtain on the voting, Buster?
Yeah, very different process. During the World Series, during the League Championship Series, they actually take votes from the broadcast partners. And I have been involved in like ESPN radio when they broadcast a particular series. You know, that booth has one vote and the broadcasters talk about it and then they submit the ballot to Major League Baseball. That's part of how that goes down. And the regular MVP is actually done by the Baseball Writers Association of America. You have two anointed voters in each city. So for each league, you have essentially 30 votes for MVP, for Cy Young Award, for Manager of the Year, Rookie of the Year, and those will be announced, I presume. I haven't seen any announcement to the contrary within a couple of weeks.
Got it. Alrighty. That does it for Bleacher Tweets for today and for the season, and that is it for the podcast. Thank you so much again for listening, everyone. We appreciate it. It was a long slog of a season. We're glad that we're getting lots of notes and tweets in that everyone, you know, enjoyed it throughout this wacky year, so we certainly appreciate that, and do subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, thanks so much to the listeners. Look, we got great feedback all year. The number spike we saw this year was pretty incredible. Kelly, when you think about it, you know, in comparison with like the Fox World Series ratings, I feel terribly honored that our numbers were up this year and significantly.
Yeah, I didn't really bridge that gap there. That is quite an honor for sure. I mean, hey, we're doing something to drive the fans more so than Major League Baseball. So baseball, Rob Manfred, if you guys want to talk, we got ideas over here. Let us know.
Well, and thanks again, Taylor, for everything you did this year.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
And also today, thanks to Tim, to Todd, to Hembo, to Jesse Rogers. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day. And I want to finish up the pods this year as we do every year, the last pod for our daily broadcast. And that is a reading of Green Fields of the Mind by the late Commissioner Bart Giamatti. Please give a listen.
This little piece was originally written one afternoon as the class notes for the class of 1960 in Yale College. I was the class secretary. I had absolutely nothing to say about my classmates. I wrote what you're about to hear. It was properly and immediately rejected by the Yale Alumni Magazine on the grounds that it was completely irrelevant to the purpose of the class notes. I accepted the judgment cheerfully, and then when unaccountably 2 months later I became president, the Alumni Magazine reprinted it. Remarkable, but not as class notes. It breaks your heart. It is designed to break your heart. The game begins in the spring when everything else begins again, and it blossoms in the summer, filling the afternoons and evenings, and then as soon as the chill rains come, it stops and leaves you to face the fall alone. You count on it, rely on it to buffer the passage of time, to keep the memory of sunshine and high skies alive, and then just when the days are all twilight, when you need it most, it stops. Today, October 2nd, a Sunday of rain and broken branches and leaf-clogged drains and slick streets, it stopped and summer was gone. Somehow the summer seemed to slip by faster this time. Maybe it wasn't this summer, but all the summers that in this, my 40th summer, slipped by so fast. There comes a time when every summer will have something of autumn in it. Whatever the reason, it seemed to me that I was investing more and more in baseball, making the game do more of the work that keeps time fat and slow and lazy. I was counting on the game's deep patterns, three strikes, three outs, three times, three innings, and its deepest impulse to go out and back, to leave and to return home, to set the order of the day and to organize the daylight. I wrote a few things this summer that did not last. Nothing grand, but some things. And yet that work was just camouflage. The real activity was done with the radio, not the all-seeing, all-falsifying television. And was the playing of the game in the only place it will last, the enclosed green field of the mind. There in that warm, bright place, what the old poet called mutability does not so quickly come. But out here, on Sunday, October 2nd, when it rains all day, Dame Mutability never loses. She was in the crowd at Fenway yesterday, a gray day full of bluster and contradiction. When the Red Sox came up in the last of the ninth, trailing Baltimore 8-5, well, the Yankees, rain delayed against Detroit, needing only to win one or have Boston lose one to win it all, sat in New York washing down cold cuts with beer and watching the Boston game. Boston had won two, the Yankees had lost two, and suddenly it seemed as if the whole season might go to the last day or beyond, except here was Boston losing 8-5, while New York sat in its family room and put up its feet. Lynn, both ankles hurting now as they had in July, hits a single down the right field line. The crowd stirs. It's on its feet. Hobson, third baseman, former Bear Bryant quarterback, strong, quiet, over 100 RBIs, goes for three breaking balls and is out. The goddess smiles and encourages her agent, a canny journeyman named Nelson Bryles. Now comes a pinch hitter, Bernie Carbo, one-time Rookie of the Year, erratic, quick, a shade too handsome, so laid back he's always in his soul, stretched out in the tall grass, one arm under his head, watching the clouds and laughing. Now he looks over some low stuff unworthy of him, and then, uncoiling, sends one out. Straight on a rising line, over the center field wall, no cheap Fenway shot, but all of it, the physics as elegant as the arc the ball describes. New England is on its feet, roaring. The summer will not pass. Roaring, they recall the evening late and cold in 1975, the sixth game of the World Series, perhaps the greatest baseball game played in the last 50 years, when Carbo, loose and easy, had uncoiled to tie the game that Fisk would win. It is now 8-7, one out, and school will never start, rain will never come, sun will warm the back of your neck forever. Now Bailey, picked up from the National League recently, big arms, heavy gut experience, new to the league and the club, fouls off too, and then checking, tentative, a big man off balance, he pops a soft liner to the first baseman. It is suddenly darker and later. And the announcer doing the game coast to coast, a New Yorker who works for a New York television station, sounds relieved. His little world, well lit, hot combed, split second timed, has no capacity to absorb this much gritty, grainy, contrary reality. Cox swings a bat, stretches his long arm, bends his back. The rookie from Pawtucket who broke in 2 weeks ago with a record six straight hits, a kid drafted ahead of Freddie Lynn, rangy, smooth, cool. The count runs 2-2, and Cox swings, and the ball beginning toward the mound, and then, in a jaunty, wayward dance, skips past Bryles, fainting to the right, skimming the last of the grass, finding the dirt, moving now like some small, purposeful marine creature negotiating the green deep, easily avoiding the jagged rock of second base, and traveling steady and straight now, out into the dark, silent recesses of center field. Well, the aisles are jammed, the places on its feet, the wrappers, the program, the Coke cups and peanut shells, the detritus of an afternoon, the anxieties, the things that have to be done tomorrow, the regrets about yesterday, the accumulation of a summer, all forgotten, while hope, the anchor, bites and takes hold, where a moment before it had seemed we would be swept out with the tide. Rice is up. Rice, who Aaron had said was the only one he'd seen with the ability to break his records. Rice, the best clutch hitter on the club with the best slugging percentage in the league. Rice, so quick and strong, he once checked his swing halfway through and snapped the bat in two. Rice, the hammer of God, sent to scourge the Yankees. The sound was overwhelming. Fathers pounded their sons in the back. Cars pulled off the road. Households froze. New England exulted in its blessedness and roared its thanks for all good things for Rice and for a summer stretching halfway through October. Briles threw, Rice swung, and it was over. One pitch, fly to center, and it stopped. Summer died in New England, and like rain sliding off a roof, the crowd slipped out of Fenway quickly, with only a steady murmur of concern for the drive ahead remaining of the roar. Dame mutability had turned the seasons and translated hope to memory once again. And once again, she had used baseball, our best invention to stay change, to bring change on. That is why it breaks my heart, that game. Not because in New York they could win, because Boston lost, and that there's a rough justice and a reminder to the Yankees of how slight and fragile are the circumstances that exalt one group of human beings over another. It breaks my heart because it was meant to. Because it was meant to foster in me again the illusion that there was something abiding, some pattern and some impulse that could come together to make a reality that would resist the corrosion. And because after it had fostered again that most hungered for illusion, the game was meant to stop and betray precisely what it promised. Now, of course there are those who learn after the first few times. They grow out of sports. And there are others who are born with the wisdom to know that nothing lasts. These are the truly tough among us, the ones who can live without illusion or without even the hope of illusion. But I am not that grown up or up to date. I am a simpler creature, tied to more primitive patterns and cycles. I need to think something lasts forever. And it might as well be that state of being that is a game. It might as well be that in a green field in the sun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.